Welcome to episode 22 of Frank Reactions, the podcast where we help you get better reactions from your customers, staff, suppliers, and stakeholders by providing better customer experience online and off. My name is Temma Frank, and I'm your host. Today's episode is the second in a series of interviews that I did recently at the Customer Experience Strategies Summit in Toronto. Last week, I aired my conversation with one of the leading researchers in the customer experience field, Bruce Temkin. And if you missed it, you can find it at frankreactions.com/21, or of course on iTunes or Stitcher. Today, we've got a doubleheader, and it's clear, I guess, that I'm getting psyched for my trip to Las Vegas in a week for New Media Expo. So I'm bringing you interviews that I did with two people, both of whom are based in Las Vegas. First up is my interview with Lou D'Angeli, who is the Senior Director of Marketing, Public Relations, and Sales at Cirque du Soleil. The interview has quite a marketing strategy focus, not just customer experience, but since the Cirque du Soleil really is all about customer experience and creating those wow moments, I'm confident that even non-marketers will learn from this short interview and will enjoy it. The second interview is with Patrick Duffy, who is the Chief Experience Officer for Diamond Resorts International. In his talk at the Customer Experience Summit, he mentioned that Diamond Resorts had bought a company with a very toxic culture and had to incorporate that into their organization. And I was really curious to find out how they turned that around. I'll chat with you briefly at the end of these two interviews.
Lou D'Angeli, Senior Director of Marketing, Public Relations, and Sales at Cirque du Soleil in Las Vegas.
Okay. Got to start off, you have this wrestling background. So
I do.
You worked for WWE before this.
Yep.
Both of them are obviously about entertainment, but tell me about the similarities and differences from a marketing perspective.
From a marketing perspective, the similar is our job is to put butts in seats.
Okay.
And we need to sell tickets.
Right.
The messaging is a lot different, though. WWE has so much programming, on national TV and stuff like that, that their marketing relies heavily on what their storylines are.
Yes.
So it's what they're doing on a day-to-day basis that further their storylines. Where our storyline for the show stays the same.
Right.
We may refresh some of the acts. We may do things a little differently, but that's a huge difference. And that's how their marketing is. Their marketing's changed out on a weekly basis, where we're kind of a little more long-term, only because we can be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you're in wrestling, in the wrestling business, your stories can change in a second.
Mm-hmm.
And when it changes that quickly, you have to be able to react.
Right.
At Cirque, we can plan a little more in advance on that.
Yeah, okay.
But the advertising mediums and things like that are pretty all. I mean, look, obviously there's a heavy focus now on social and digital marketing.
Yes.
That both of us do.
Yep.
I think social and digital is really where it's taken off. There's still the traditional piece that you have to focus on. Like I say, there's things in Las Vegas that you have to be part of no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's the most expensive piece of advertising in the world, you still have to do it because you have to get the impressions and you have to make people react.
Right.
The biggest difference, I think, though, between the two companies is that we have 8 shows in Las Vegas. So that's 8 different ways you have to market one brand.
Right.
WWE has 3 different brands, but ultimately kind of the same product, and we're a little different. Our 8 shows are completely different than each other.
Although it's interesting because the Cirque du Soleil brand is so strong that
yeah.
I think a lot of people, it's about, I'm going to go see a Cirque show rather
yeah.
than a specific
Yeah, that's
show.
A huge issue. That's yeah. actually a challenge. I mean, it's people can't identify our show names sometimes.
Really?
Or they call us the Beatles show, the Michael Jackson
right.
show,
yeah.
Things like that. Whereas, in wrestling, they know it's WWE and they know it's who the guys are and stuff like that. Cirque
okay.
is just, it speaks to the power of the brand, but it also, in a way, it may be a negative because when you have 8 shows to sell and 8 different properties and someone saw the Cirque show at MGM Grand, they're not identifying that as Ka.
Mm-hmm.
And we need them to.
Right.
So we try to do more and more, and we're changed a lot of ways our advertising looks. So it's truly 8 different campaigns versus 8 different campaigns that look the same kind of. They're very drastically changed now.
Oh, that is interesting.
Yeah.
I loved Ka, by the way.
It's a fantastic show.
It is a great show. So you talked in the presentation about the fact that you have this incredibly diverse group of people that you work with.
Yeah.
I mean, people are recruited because they are unique and original.
Yep.
And yet you have to bring them together
mm-hmm.
in a common way. Can you talk a little bit about how the heck you do that?
It's a common theme of making and building a successful show together. And I think one thing I didn't touch on in the presentation, and I should have, but I'll touch on with you, is that when people are brought in, everyone's brought in at day one. You know, it's not like someone's brought in at day one, and then someone's brought in at day 15, and then someone's brought in a year later. It's like they get people in all together. And there are those situations where you may add a new act, or you may do something that comes a little further down the line. But those people, like, I remember one of my friends this happened to. She was brought in 3 months after they had started a process for one of the shows. Mm-hmm. And they spent 2 weeks catching her up on where they had been the last 3 months. So she was part of that.
Interesting.
So it's vesting people right away. Okay. And what you're doing. And I wish I had talked about that a little bit more, but it ultimately goes to what I did say, which is it's the one path to build a successful show, a safe show, an exciting show, a show full of wow moments, and a show that people will remember and smile about when they leave.
One thing that's come up today, I mean, you touched on it, but so did one of the earlier speakers, is the importance of talking to some of your detractors or non-purchasers as well as your purchasers. How do you go about doing that? How do you find those people? What do you say to them?
We work with our partner at MGM, specifically in Las Vegas, and they're able to say that they'll send out a survey and say, did you see a Cirque show?
Okay.
And the ones who say no, we get that data. We then contact them. We bring them in. It's like, why didn't you see a Cirque show?
Okay.
And a lot of it's price.
Yeah.
It's a pricing issue. A lot of it's I wasn't there to see shows. I was there to gamble, or I was there to go to a nightclub. But I'll tell you, I mean, the majority of it goes to pricing.
Oh, I get that.
Yeah. But that's what we do. We work hand in hand with our partners to say why.
Right.
Because they want to know, too. Look, they have just as much risk in it as we do. So,
sure.
I mean, we all have to be successful, so they help us with that.
I think that's actually a really good point that's often overlooked, too, is the importance of, you know, whether it's your suppliers or your co-marketing partners, making sure that you're all working towards a common goal there.
You do.
As well.
And we have great partners, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, when I talk about the Beatles, or I talk about the Michael Jackson estate, or MGM, partners like that, they want to help us. They're not mm-hmm. just like, it's not just about their IP is being used in our show and then they get a royalty. It's about what we can do to make it successful.
Well, I thought that was very interesting too. You gave an example of a situation with a customer where it was really the partner who had screwed up, but you guys dealt with it. Can you elaborate? Just tell what that situation was.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we was in that situation, I think, had to do with a ticket. And I don't know, we have wholesalers. We have our main ticketing company that we use. We have two ticketing companies we use actually, but we have, you know, maybe eight different outlets you can buy tickets in.
Right.
In that situation, that partner just didn't fulfill their end of what they were supposed to do. And because Cirque's name is on it, mm-hmm. we're the front-facing brand to that consumer. They contacted us.
Right.
It's very easy. And we did. We will go back to them on the back end of it and say, you guys, you can't do this. But we'll handle the situation ourselves.
Well, that's what's great about it is you're not saying to the customer, you deal with it. You're saying, okay, we'll take care of it, and then you sort it out later.
Yes.
We just did some research on responsiveness of brands on Twitter, and or lack thereof. But one of the things that drives me crazy that I've seen is where they'll say, well, you have to contact our customer service handle.
And
it's
I hate that. Yeah.
Excuse me. You can forward my request to your customer service.
I have seen brands who have five or six different Twitter handles.
Yeah.
To me, that just confuses it
even
more.
Totally.
It drives me personally nuts. I forget. There was somebody I was dealing with an issue, and they said the same thing. I think it was my cable provider. And that's just like, you know, at that point, I'd just rather honestly cancel the service and go with somebody else because I don't want to chase six different people.
Absolutely.
That's the convenience of online. You're supposed to be able to hit one person.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You did talk the millennials and the difficulty capturing millennials. Is it not with them, though, also a big issue of money?
It's disposable income now.
Okay.
So if you're talking about millennials.
Right, so they've gone down to spend a bunch of money, and this is,
We kind of have the theory, and our research shows it, that if there's a bunch of millennials, you know, 25, 26-year-old will save up their whole year to go to Vegas, they're going to blow it all on nightclubs.
Right.
And it's how do we become part of that mix? Because a nightclub's not a cheap experience either. I mean, if you're paying $50 to $75 just to walk in the door, you're paying $400 bottle service. I mean,
it's not
cheap. So they have the money.
Yeah.
It's just where they put the money is the question. And then for us, that ties into our pricing perception, where, as I said earlier, people think we're overpriced. And when in reality, you could come in cheaper to one of our shows sometimes than some of the nightclubs.
Well, and also I think there is, you know, maybe your cover charge getting into the nightclub may be a lot smaller, but they don't stop to think about how much they're spending during the course of the night. Exactly.
I mean, they do the, you know, I think the average, I don't know, $45-$50 to walk in the door. You could buy a surf ticket if you found it in the right place for the same, but
right,
it's $45-$50 to get in the door. It's $25 a beer. It's $400 a bottle. It's
ends
up being $1,000 or, you know, 500 bucks. It's a lot. But hey, you know, I don't knock it. I mean, that's what they want to do. We just have to find a way to let them know that we can be part of that mix also.
So what does your research tell you in terms of, are there interests in that, like they're not interested in that type of entertainment? Is
that's
an
what we're
age
working
thing?
On right now.
Okay.
Literally working on right now. We believe there is an interest there. We believe it's an accessibility misunderstanding that they can do all three things. If they really want to go to a day club, they could go to a day club, they could go to a Cirque show, and they could go to a nightclub. That's a very long day. But our object is to capture them somewhere, either after the day club or before the nightclub, somewhere there's a sweet spot in there for us. Because remember, you know, a nightclub's going to 4 or 5 in the morning, so you don't have to go to 1 or 2 in the morning or midnight or however long you want to
right.
go. And we're pretty much wrapped up by 11 o'clock every night. So
right.
there's room for it. It's just how you crack it, how you speak to them. That's really the bigger problem, is how you talk to them, which is another thing I wish I had kind of hit on in there, too. It's how you talk to millennials. What do you say to them? How do you make them convert over and mm-hmm. let them know? Because not everybody reacts to the same ads that I react to, you react to,
right.
or people listening react to.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
You mentioned that your show's performers will be performing over 400. What's 470?
470, about 477, 475, yeah.
And that's the same individuals?
That is.
How do they keep fresh, and how do you keep them inspired about that customer experience?
They are motivated by the wow factors that they get every night.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not an artist. I can't speak to them, but the artists that I do know that there's people that'll say, just like a rock band who's on tour.
I suppose.
They'll say it's every night it's a different crowd, and they're seeing it. You have to remember there's somebody out there that's seeing you perform for the first time ever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
You know, look, I've done this presentation a lot of different times, and for me, I never go into it as, oh, I can just call this in and just run through this deck and get out.
Mm.
It's about probably everybody in that room had never seen me speak before, never had anybody from Cirque speak to them before, and that's how you have to take that. And I think the artists take that the same way.
Okay, fair enough. What do you find in your role are the toughest challenges, particularly with regard to customer experience?
It's the added value piece of it. It's what else do you get besides a show ticket? I think people have an expectation now that we know this. They want more than just a ticket. They want a ticket, a dinner package, a nightclub inclusion. They want added value. It's not just they don't want to just spend 50 or 60 or 70 bucks for a ticket. They want to do more things. And we try to
so it's
try
about
to do
partnering
that
with other organizations to do.
Yep, and we do
deals.
It. We do the restaurant packages. We do all that. But it's like it's messaging and a lot of clutter too.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So it's like, you know, we rely on our box offices and our call centers and things like that to upsell that to people because they have to know it's available. And it does work.
Okay.
It does work. It's just you have to find the sweet spot of what it is and what the price point is. More so, no one wants to pay face value for a ticket and then pay face value for dinner than when they could have just done that on their own. So we work and we try to work out a deal. And sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's not. But when it works, it works really well.
How big a social media team do you have?
We have two in Las Vegas.
Just two?
Two.
And yet you are really good about answering all your tweets and feedback in real time. How do you manage that?
We just have a bigger team in Montreal that helps us too.
Okay.
So I don't want to neglect them. But in Las Vegas, there's two people that are responsible for social, and it's this constant monitoring of the feeds and addressing the issues. I mean, we go through them quite frequently, and when there's a big issue that
through
pops
the tweets,
up,
not the people.
Yeah, no, the people stick around. We have a great retention rate. Yeah, that's funny though. No, you would think they might go a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
We all kind of keep our eye on it though. Like, you know, it's kind of like all in the back of our mind. Like, and we also alert them when there's a situation. Like if there's an artist injury, a show cancellation, something that's happened, we'll let them know and we'll be proactive about issuing the statement. And I think the more proactive you are, the less you have to go check for things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I gave an example during the presentation about an injury to one of our artists in Zarkana.
Yeah.
And had we not issued that statement, we would have been answering, you know, we would have issued the statement anyway.
Right.
So we might as well just have the statement come up right up front-facing statement saying right away, this is what happened, the person's okay, and thank you,
mm-hmm.
and then we've addressed it. You have to stay ahead of it. You can't wait for it. In that case, if you can be proactive and get a message out before, you have to be reactionary, it saves a lot of time.
Yeah. Anything else I should have asked you and I haven't?
The future of Cirque is bright.
My name is Patrick Duffy, and I am the Chief Experience Officer for Diamond Resorts International out of Las Vegas, Nevada.
You mentioned in your talk that a few years ago your organization bought another that had a very toxic culture. I'd like to find out more about what you bought and how you managed to turn that around.
Sure. We bought a company purposefully because the bones of the company were great.
Okay.
And that included the team members. But we also realized traveling around that a lot of the team members were empowered, were trained, were motivated, and were disciplined in really maintaining a very strict business decision process, which often really kind of went right down to the meaning of no.
Mm-hmm.
No, we can't. No, we won't. No, it's not our policy, procedure, terms, and conditions.
Right.
Well, after a couple of years after we acquired this company, the chairman and several of the executives, we traveled around and we all found this to be very consistent in our conversation. Our chairman, who you probably have seen on Undercover Boss twice, is a person who is a very, very active part of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically said at a meeting one day, he says, "I want everything to be yes."
Mm.
And big mouth me said, "Well, it's a little difficult to do. It's a little difficult to deliver on. You're supposed to take that." He said, "Well, good." He says, "Then that's going to be your
role."
So he came up with the meaning of yes. I created the material. I took it on the road, delivered it to 6,700 of our team members in 7 different languages. And we literally changed the entire decision process and understanding of their roles and the importance of their roles in that vacation experience for each one of our owners and members.
So can you give me some concrete examples of where that changed things?
Well, sure.
Or how that changed
things? Sure. A member who is a gold member, gold loyalty member, comes in and you know, wants an upgrade right at the counter from a one-bedroom to a two-bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And we have many two-bedrooms in the inventory. Of course, the owner member doesn't know that, but in the earlier way of thinking was, well, you didn't make the reservation through the normal process. I can't do it here at this point.
Right.
It's not permitted. Okay? And that was their thinking. That's the way they were trained. That's the business aspect of it. No problem there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what we did is we said, look, you've got 15 two-bedrooms laying vacant.
Yeah.
Delight them.
Yeah, why not?
Make that vacation experience something that they'll never forget.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to the point of the young lady earlier where it says it didn't cost anything, it doesn't. It never costs a nickel, a dollar to really give exceptional customer service.
So why would that even have been the rule in the first place? Like,
well, it was, you know, it was a company that we, you know, we bought. We didn't really know why. It was just, it was probably just to maintain as strict a control on the business,
right,
you know, and business bottom lines. And again, it goes back to these silos that are created that often perpetuate this type of mentality
mm-hmm.
in a business.
Right.
You know, the silos never come together. They always stay within their concrete structures and
mm-hmm.
make those decisions. And those decisions somehow get filtered down to those folks on the front line. The interesting part about that, people that are living in the silos have never been on the front line.
Yeah.
They have absolutely no idea
yeah.
of that interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Vis-a-vis, they have no idea how easy it really is to say, yes, of course, we've got 15 two-bedrooms available. Let me give you one to make your vacation absolutely fantastic.
Right. Where do you think most companies don't have central office staff spend some time in the front lines?
Maybe it's because they're afraid. Maybe they're really not secure in their definition of really a great customer experience.
Hmm.
Whether maybe it's because they can't remember the last time they had one, which I identify there that a lot of us really don't even remember that.
Yeah.
And certainly if they can't remember having one, how can you really put together a concrete model, you know, about really putting forth a great customer experience that's consistent?
Mm-hmm.
It can't be a one-off. It's got to be consistent.
Okay, so let's just question that then,
mm-hmm.
coming back to why they may have had that rule about not upgrading at the desk. There, essentially, you're saying, yes, do a one-off. Somebody's come with and asked for something out of the ordinary, do it.
Absolutely.
So does that not contradict with the notion of being consistent?
Not knowing what their business was previous to us
sure.
acquiring it. Okay. That one-off and that consistency to that owner and member who, for however many years they've been an owner and member, has always encountered the no, we can't. Mm-hmm. We finally broke that.
Yep.
And we did it as a one-off. But now that owner member understands that the whole culture and philosophy of Diamond Resorts is looking into your toolbox and finding out what we can do. Maybe we can't do that every time. Maybe the next time they come in, there are no two bedrooms.
Right.
Okay. But maybe we'll find something else for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, transparency, accountability, and honesty. If we don't have it, we can't build it and make it for you.
Sure.
But when we do have it, God, let me give it to you. Just makes all the difference.
So what are some of the other types of things that you had in that toolbox?
Well, we had room upgrades. We had, okay, if someone was a little late, perhaps, in their annual maintenance fee payment, and they told us I was in the hospital, okay, there was a time when, sorry, there's nothing I can do. Okay?
Wow.
And it wasn't anyone's fault. It was just the way that, you know, we strictly went by, this was the date, this was the due date, and after that due date, it started accruing finance charges, late fees,
right.
and things like that.
Yeah.
What our team members did, and what we, part of the meaning of yes, and understanding that importance of vacation and the nurturing of humanity that vacations really puts forth,
mm-hmm.
we realized that let's take a look at that member's history. History will tell you everything about their behavior mm-hmm. and their respect to the brand,
right.
respect to their membership. Well, we looked, they've been on time every single year.
Right.
So guess what we did? Waive the fees.
Of course.
Waive the charges. Here you go, no problem. How are you feeling, by the way?
Yeah, exactly.
Listen to them.
Now, I would imagine giving the front lines that kind of flexibility really made those staff happier. What about the people who had not been frontline people, though, who had worked in that culture? How did you turn their attitudes around?
Well, the meaning of yes, first of all, was a consistent platform presentation and sharing. So those in the back office, those at corporate, those at the remote corporates, all received the same training as the front, as the housekeepers, engineering, reception,
mm-hmm.
They all received the same. And we went through, you know, through the course of Q&A and really understanding what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a giveaway. We're not lying
right.
flat down on our backs. Oh, come, you know.
Right.
No. And our owners and our members really responded very, very well. Had very few people really kind of like, shall we say, take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
They just liked it because they've had years of no, we can't, no,
yep.
we won't. Now, all of a sudden, Diamond Resorts International is imparting the meaning of yes, and now I can really enjoy my vacation.
I'm really interested, though, in the dynamic internally, because mm-hmm. obviously your customers are going to be happier, mm-hmm. and I can see more frontline. But a lot of organizations seem to have trouble. I mean, we talked about breaking down silos, but even just changing attitudes of people who have been reared to think, I can't let this out of my control.
Control.
Yeah.
That's
so
it.
Tell me more about how you break those fears down.
It's not easy. It's not a panacea. It's not easy. It takes a while. It takes examples. And in some cases, it takes realizing that maybe those team members are better as customers than as team members.
Okay.
Because when the entire culture changes, everyone has to change.
Yeah.
You have to adapt to change.
Yep.
It's growth, and we're growing.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, I will say this, our team members, because of the empowerment, because of the fact that they were able to let go of that control, because remember, that control yielded them a very harsh interaction.
Yes.
No one wants to have a harsh interaction.
No.
So by imparting the meaning of yes and understanding that stayed vacation component, our team members could deliver something that was always a delight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sure, we had to defer to no, because, you know, the meaning of yes also has we love to say yes, but sometimes we can't.
Right.
You know, sometimes your request is just too preposterous.
Right.
Okay. But it's all in how you listen and all in how you react and that empathy that you put forth to
right.
each one of those owners and members and team members.
Yes.
I've said the meaning of yes, the empathy, the understanding of this whole philosophy has got to start inside and filter out. It can't filter outside in. That's backwards, and it's going to be a catastrophe. Nurture it inside, get them to understand it inside, and then all of a sudden, everyone is kind of like, there's a certain harmony and a certain understanding.
Any other thoughts on the customer experience challenges faced in your industry or generally?
Well, you know, in our industry, what we're now embarking on is an incredible, incredible rebranding called Statevacation.
Okay.
And we are, as a company, very, very hell-bent on making certain that that Statevacation begins internally with our team members first.
What do you mean by the Statevacation?
Well, every one of our team members has vacation time.
Yep.
We find that many of them don't use all of their vacation time for whatever the reason is.
Right.
And maybe it's, you know, I've got too much work, or what will they think? What will they think about my loyalty? Or I can't afford to go on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's all sorts of different reasons. We as a company want our team members to enjoy their vacations, to enjoy their time with your family. And people say to me, what if I can't afford to go somewhere? I said, you know, home is somewhere that you don't spend a lot of time at.
Yeah.
And guess what? On your vacation, the one thing you don't have to do is set your alarm clock in the morning. That's a vacation.
Exactly. Yeah. So, Patrick, do you take all your vacation time?
Damn right I do. And some.
I hope you enjoyed today's interviews. If you're going to be in Las Vegas for New Media Expo the week of April 13th, do give me a shout. I'd love to link up with you. You can reach me at Tema, T-E-M as in marketing A, at frankreactions.com, or on Twitter simply at Tema Frank. We're starting to release transcripts of all these podcast interviews, so you can get those by going to frankreactions.com. We've got a first batch actually put together as a customer experience series, and you can get those by clicking on the blue book picture that you'll see on the right-hand side of the website. Or you can download each one or anyone that interests you individually on that show's page. You'll be able to find today's episode at frankreactions.com/22. Or of course, if you just want to listen, by subscribing on iTunes or Stitcher. And while you're there, it'd be awesome if you'd give us a review. That's all for this week. Talk to you again soon. Bye.